Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Roughly 17 years ago, I logged into a fledgling social media platform called Twitter, typed three words, and pressed post. Those words, by the way, this confuses me. I was befuddled because Twitter seemed redundant at the time, 2:54 p.m. on April 11th, 2008 to be exact. What was the point of summing up your thoughts in just 140 characters, especially when you could express yourself with Facebook statuses or artful MySpace page design? Eventually, Twitter found its usefulness for me and millions of others as a way to absorb the news in real time. There are obvious examples, such as the Arab Spring protests in the early 2010s, demonstrations after Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, and hundreds of more mundane events in national, state, and local politics. Even as Twitter transformed into X under Elon Musk's ownership, it was still the platform that then-President Joe Biden went to when he announced he wouldn't run for a second term. But since Donald Trump returned to the White House, I found social media platforms like X less useful at understanding the policy and political turmoil from his administration. In other words, the Trump deluge on social media was confusing me. And so I decided to make some big changes. In mid-March, I made the decision to stop posting on X. I also deactivated my Threads account and deleted most social media apps off my phone. And no, I'm not cheating by looking at them through the iPhone's browser. I'm not alone. Since Trump returned to office, Brad Hicks of St. Louis also spends less time on social media platforms. And he says Trump's tendency to keep the country and reporters off balance played a role in his decision.
People want certainty. And certainty is the exact opposite of his management style. He wants to keep his negotiating partners off balance. That's got to be an incredibly crippling responsibility, an incredibly crippling problem for any journalist.
But it's not just Trump's love affair with uncertainty that drove Hicks to use social media less often. Social media algorithms often boost content that seems angry or incendiary. Hicks says this created a toxic environment.
Online, I can generally read people because I'm very literate. I'm hyper-literate, so I don't lose people's emotional connotations online the way neurotypical people frequently do. But deprived of that in-person body language feedback and facial expression feedback, people online rage and rant and throw tantrums exactly the way an autistic child does.
Hicks, by the way, is autistic. And he wasn't the only person I talked to who felt compelled to cut down on social media recently. St. Louis resident Joshua Lawrence also stepped back from places like X after he saw more and more racist and anti-Semitic content.
There you saw a complete change in just moderation. I can only get called the Kessler as a Jew so many times before, you know, gets a little old.
Lawrence spent quite a bit of time in social media communities that focus on the city of St. Louis's local political scene. And while he still keeps tabs on that often wild political discourse on Facebook and Instagram, Lawrence says he feels considerably better mentally because he spends less time on other social media platforms.
What I'm interested in is actually affecting change. You know, I love yelling on social media as much as the next person. But if all we're doing is yelling, we get so burned out. We have to remember why we're doing this and what actually brings us joy.
To be clear, there isn't enough data yet in 2025 to determine whether three anecdotes from social media users in the St. Louis region equates to a nationwide trend. In fact, news consumers have gravitated to social media platforms quite a bit in recent years, with the Pew Research Center showing that 54% of respondents primarily get their news from places like Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, or threats. Sima Dahlheimer of St. Louis wasn't a heavy social media user before Trump returned to office in January. And now she's been following a lot of the developments of his administration on Facebook.
I think of it as a utility, like, you know, well, cable used to be something, but it's not anymore. But, you know, like internet or, you know, my water, my, you know, sewer, the utilities of my home. I really think of Facebook as sort of a utility at this point when it comes to communication. And so disengaging myself from that would be really difficult unless it really turned into a cesspool like Twitter/X did.
And while X's lurch to the right definitely prompted more left-of-center users to go elsewhere or sign off completely, Republicans like Niall Stevens say they like the way billionaire Elon Musk has overhauled the microblogging site. He also says from a functional standpoint, it's quicker and easier to learn about news on social media than just going to a news website.
Also, just more real-time information. So if you hear something on the radio, you hear someone talking about an issue or something like that, it's just faster and easier, it seems like, to check social media versus trying to go through a news site or Google a news source.
I think I need to pause for a moment to acknowledge that journalists like me are not unbiased in this discussion. Many of us fervently see technology companies like TikTok, Facebook, and X as competitors. The more time someone spends scrolling through a feed can mean less time reading a news outlet's website, something that no doubt affects the bottom line for journalistic entities. Matt Pierce is a senior policy advisor with Rebuild Local News. That nonprofit group advocates for governmental policies aimed at revitalizing the languishing journalism industry. The former Los Angeles Times reporter and Cass County, Missouri native noted that a number of social media platforms have deprioritized links to news outlets. He says that's not an accident.
Even the forms of journalism that journalists do produce are less likely to reach the public, not necessarily because of an ideological bias in the algorithms, but because of a structural bias in the algorithms. These are advertising-based companies that don't want people leaving the advertising on those platforms to go onto the NewYorkTimes.com or to, you know, the Kansas City Star's website or wherever.
News outlets have struggled for years on how to deal with the rise of social media platforms that make their already dire financial outlook, well, even more dire. But that doesn't completely mean that news consumers have abandoned traditional outlets. For instance, University City resident Janie Brennan told me she's boosted her time on Facebook to follow the trajectory of the Trump administration. But she's also made sure to go to news websites as well.
I think occasionally it is a little overwhelming, but I feel like there's so much happening and it's so important to the state of the country and everyone's well-being and safety sometimes that it's important that I keep involved. I don't feel like it's right for me to just check out.
For me, even though I've taken steps to curtail my social media intake, I haven't completely abandoned platforms. In fact, I've put even more energy into creating videos for Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, primarily because I like doing it, and it requires more thought than impulsively sending out a tweet. And for more on this topic of Trump social media fatigue, we're pleased to welcome Texas State University professor Amber Hinesley. Hinesley is an expert on multimedia journalism and used to teach at St. Louis University before she headed off to the Lone Star State. Professor Hinesley, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thank you, Jason.
You just heard from five St. Louis area social media users about their news consumption habits since Trump returned to office. Based off your studies that you've read and from teaching aspiring journalists, was any of it surprising to you?
Unfortunately, none of it is surprising. And a lot of that's because of what we're seeing reported on in the media. There's this phenomenon that people are talking about called post-election fatigue, where people are just exhausted, and that exhaustion continues through following things on social media sometimes. Typically people will have one of two reactions. They either consume it more because it's fueling that need to know. For other folks, it's they shut down. And the only way that they feel that they can kind of stay clear is to avoid social media.
Several people who cut down on social media use for finding news told me they felt a lot better mentally since changing their habits. I can say from my experience, I'm happier, more focused, less distracted. But what does the data actually say about how people feel when they either detach or plug in more to social media platforms?
Right. Well, we have to remember that, as some of your guests talked about, is that, these are businesses and they are looking to get reactions from people and to feed reactions from people. And they want those hits and they want those likes and things like that. And so thinking about our emotional reactions is what social media companies, it's what a lot of information creators are wanting. And so one of the things that we see happening is what's called news avoidance, where people are avoiding news on social media and other places because it just feels so heavy. And so one of the things that I recommend is, rather than tuning out, is practicing a more, what you call a critical consumption of news. And so looking beyond those headlines and those short TikTok length videos to question, what is the author of this piece want me to do with this information? What reaction are they looking for? How is this story framed? Is maybe a little more of a mental health way to approach the story where you can, or approach news consumption, where you can protect your mental health a little more.
Now, we can't read Donald Trump's mind or even his closest advisors' minds, but some have theorized that the deluge of news is a deliberate strategy to disorient and demoralize people who may object to his policies. What have you heard about that, and what do you think about that theory?
That's absolutely something that people are talking about. And generally, you see it in sort of the left-leaning community conversations where people are very skeptical of the approach that the Trump administration is taking to everything that they're doing right now. So many policies, so many decisions are coming out that, again, it feels overwhelming. And it's this cognitive overload that we're experiencing that contributes to that exhaustion. And as a coping mechanism, we're pulling away. Right? The mental labor that's required to parse apart all of those policies and decisions and controversies and potential misinformation, it just leaves us feeling burned out and we kind of freeze. It's like being immobilized. And so that leads to disengagement. And skeptics will say that's exactly what the administration and what others want, is an electorate who just is incapable of responding because they're so overwhelmed.
And given that social media is not for news in the last 30 seconds before we go to break, do you think that these social media platforms are structured well enough to handle all this news?
Well, they used to have Facebook, for example, used to have fact verification, and they've taken that away. And part of that was feedback and pressure they got from other groups who were arguing, well, you're not presenting our facts and you're not checking our facts. And so that's where you start to delve into this idea of people want news and information that confirms what they already believe.
We need to continue.
Sure, go ahead. I know we're going into break here.
Yeah, we need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Texas State University journalism professor Amber Hinesley.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. We now continue our conversation about social media in the era of Donald Trump with Amber Hinesley, a journalism professor who teaches at Texas State University and used to teach at St. Louis University. I would be remiss if I talked about people's perceptions of social media platforms and the second Trump administration without talking about these platforms' leaders. Elon Musk obviously has been a key part of Trump's government-cutting exploits. Meta's Mark Zuckerberg made specific overtures to Trump after he won. TikTok's executives lavished praise on Trump for not enforcing a ban on the social media application. How do you think the increasing political activism of these social media barons is prompting people to rethink their social media habits?
You know, that's a good question. And I think there's a lot of people who don't think so much about the political connections that social media platform leaders have. They're looking at it as, how does this affect my everyday life? It enables me to stay connected with other people. And so for some people, they're not thinking about the politics behind it. But we are seeing some people who are saying, I'm not using certain platforms because I don't agree with the political stances, the political statements that the leaders of this particular platform have taken. I think that's something we'll see play out in the future a little bit more. But right now, there hasn't been a huge impact that these organizations are seeing with people leaving to flock to other types of platforms. And so I think they would pay more attention if and when that starts happening.
There may be one exception to that rule. In the last segment, we heard from Matt Pierce, a former Los Angeles Times journalist who now works for a nonprofit aimed at pushing governmental policies to help the journalism industry. He pointed out that Blue Sky saw a surge in popularity after Trump won a second term last year.
There's this convergence on Blue Sky where you have progressives that wandered over there because they kind of hated the other platforms, but you also have the way that Blue Sky is set up doesn't discriminate against sharing links and news stories the way that the rest of the internet does. And so like Blue Sky has become this like ultra news sharing node about everything that the Trump administration is up to, both because of the very progressive people that are hanging out there and also because the technology itself is set up to allow for that sort of thing in a way that other platforms aren't. Like it doesn't sell any advertising right now.
That was Matt Pierce with Rebuilding Local News, a nonprofit group that's seeking to revive languishing news outlets. What's your take on what Matt had to say there?
I think that's very true. And we did see that happening. You know, what I would say is it's still a much smaller proportion of people on Blue Sky, and they're not engaging as actively as they were on some of the other social media platforms. It's a lot of younger. I just pulled up some demographic information on Blue Sky to make sure that I was familiar with this here real quick. It says that it's mostly sort of younger, middle class folks who are using it. It's a lot of journalists sharing their information. You know, sort of what we saw with the beginning of Twitter, where it was a lot of content creators, news creators using Twitter, and you had a lot of conversations that were happening on Twitter. And so my hope is that Blue Sky can become something like that, but I would say it's still really in its foundational stages.
Yeah, and both Matt and I observed that Blue Sky does have some advantages over X. It's less chaotic in terms of how the rules are set up. It doesn't suffer from main character syndrome, where everything revolves around the antics of the company's owner, Elon Musk. But it does feel sometimes like a progressive or liberal echo chamber, which makes it less useful for journalists that need to monitor Republican politicians in GOP-leaning states like Missouri. Like, there are no Missouri Republicans on Blue Sky that I've seen. Do you think this could be a long-term problem for Blue Sky?
I think so. And you're going to see this as also a problem for journalists, where when you want to get those multiple sides of stories, you're going to have to actually consult multiple social platforms to really get a clear idea of what people's lived experiences are. Because you've got people who are, again, as you said, creating these echo chambers on these social sites, where you've got a lot of left-leaning folks who are talking to and amongst each other on Blue Sky. You've got other sites like Donald Trump's Truth Social and Twitter/X, where you've got very different perspectives of people who are on those sites, and there's not a lot of communication or middle ground that they're finding on those places together.
We've talked a lot about individual social media platforms and their approach to disseminating news content during Trump's second administration, but individual accounts that people go to for news are also much different than even 10 years ago. Polling from the Center for News Technology and Innovation found that nearly a quarter of respondents learn about current events through social media influencers who do not identify as journalists, What do you think that means for people who are seeking out information about national politics?
You know, there was, to tag team on the data that we're sharing here, there was a recent Pew Research Center study that in leading up to the 2024 election, they found that some of those right-leaning news influencers, so again, not journalists, were posting more often than the left-leaning influencers, especially on X and Twitter. With TikTok, you saw more left-leaning influencers who were posting during the election, but more than three-fourths of the folks on those sites, as you said, are not journalists, right? And so these followers are tending to seek out influencers who agree with what they already believe.
Yeah, and we could talk about like X and Blue Sky and Threads until the cows come home. But the reality is that video-based social media platforms like YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram have a much, 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 much larger following than text-based social media. How do you think that the medium that somebody goes to affects how people absorb and understand this information and how widely it's disseminated, given that I just mentioned those aforementioned video platforms are so much larger than the text-based ones?
Right. Well, and you have to think about, too, how often are people thinking, I want some news, I'm going to go on a particular platform, versus I want some entertainment, I need a little bit of a brain dopamine boost, I've got some downtime. Generally, people are not seeking out news. That's not their first thought when they go to these sites. It's, I'll see what's going on, what's happening with the people in my circles, things like that. Generally, people are not. They don't have that first thought of, I'm looking for news. There's more of this idea of, if it's important enough, the news will find me. And so there's more of this discovery that happens where people aren't looking for news, but they're absorbing it as they're coming across it on some of these feeds. And that actually makes it more likely that people will take in that information because they weren't consciously looking for it. And that's something that, again, as someone who researches these things, is concerning for me, because if we're not, we don't have an awareness of what we're exposed to and we're not doing that critical analysis of it, we tend to take it in and we're more likely to parrot it back, especially, again, if it's reinforcing what we already believe.
And I think we also have to talk about the structure of some of these video-based platforms. TikTok and Instagram especially incentivize people to create shorter content than, say, YouTube. I have literally watched a video on YouTube that was 4 hours long about a defunct Star Wars hotel, which says a lot about me. But how do you think that the dynamic of some of these platforms pushing shorter content, especially about the news, affects how people understand it?
Well, one defense of that is that, you know, people are creating content that they're seeing their viewers want. And so part of that is, hey, people are indicating they want these news McNugget types of videos. And so we're giving them what they want, right? That's getting us more engagement. People like, quote unquote, like what we're putting out there. But again, we're thinking about, you know, people aren't necessarily coming there for news. Most of what people are looking for is funny posts on these sites. And it's getting sprinkled in with some news and facts, as well as opinion. And things are presented in ways that you can't necessarily easily see where that information came from, who they got it from. There's not that transparency that you get from, you know, quote unquote, professional journalists, where you can't do the source evaluation and verification in some ways because you've got these little snippets of information that are being doled out on some of these social media sites, you know, as you mentioned, in Instagram and TikTok.
In the last minute we have, the 54% figure from the Pew Research Center of people who primarily get their news from social media platforms stuck with me. It's not really that wide of a gap between news outlets, websites, and social media platforms. It's only about 10%. Is it possible that social media may ultimately be the dominant way people discover news, as particularly about national politics, in the future?
You know, we're already seeing that. As you said, more than half of people are getting their news and information on social media. And media companies have been responding to that, and it's going to continue to be a place where people go for information, not just for news, but for information across all parts of their lives.
And before I let you go, how many social media platforms are you on right now? And have you cut back since Donald Trump came back?
I have. Actually, this was even before Trump was reelected, I've been using Twitter far less. I did not join Twitter as early as you did. I was a couple years after you, but I was a pretty active Twitter user for a lot of my career. And it just got to be so chaotic. And I didn't feel like I was getting much out of that experience anymore. And so I still have an active account on Twitter, but I don't really go there to lurk and read anything anymore. The app is still on my phone, but I don't really touch it. I have gravitated to, I'm on Threads, don't post a whole lot there. You know, I use Facebook personally, not professionally. For me, professionally, it's been LinkedIn, a little bit with Instagram, just to kind of keep touch on what's going on in the world.
Amber Hinesley is a journalism professor at Texas State University, where she teaches about digital and social media and how they're continuing to transform journalistic practices. Professor Hinesley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.